Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento.
Turner Sparks just got married and has moved home to America after 12 years living in China. Sir Michael Ira Kaplan has two kids, a wife, a job, and has spent his entire life in the USA. Neither one can figure their country out.
Lost in
this
America,
is Lost in America.
My name's Turner Sparks.
My name is Captain America.
You can find me at Turner B Sparks on Twitter. You can find Captain America at Captain America
on Twitter and on Instagram.
Yes.
And we are Lost in America on Instagram, and you are Turner Sparks
Instagram. And we got Randy Lee behind the glass.
Hey, Randy Lee.
On the podcast today, we have playwright Jeremy Carrickan, Broadway playwright.
Broadway playwright.
Ooh la la.
He spoke to us before, and he was not a Broadway playwright at the time, and then he came to us, and look what happened to him.
This is an example of the pod bump, Kaplan.
Yeah.
This is what happens. You come on our podcast, your dreams come true.
Yeah.
Jeremy Carrickan's new play, Lifespan of a Fact, is on Broadway right now. It's starring, what's the Harry Potter kid?
Daniel Radcliffe. Starring Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale, who you will know. I didn't know the name, but then when I saw him, I'm like, hey, it's that guy.
You've seen him in a lot of, like,
every movie ever.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? We both have seen this play. It's fantastic.
It is really good. I might have missed the first few minutes because I'm notoriously late.
Very Kaplan of you.
But the first 5 minutes I can't review, but I'll say the rest of the play was fantastic. Hilarious. Everyone should go see it.
Let's explain to the audience right now so we can jump right into it when Jeremy comes in. What's going on? So the play is, it's 85 minutes. There's no intermission, which I love. We'll get into that.
Yeah, it's good to tell the audience that because don't drink too many of those Pepsi Colas beforehand.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And it's all based off of one article, a real article written in the early 2000s, I believe, right? It's an editor, it's a journalist, and it's an intern for 85 minutes breaking down this news story.
Yeah, essentially a writer writes an article about somebody who commits suicide.
Yes.
And he writes it in very, like, really well-written article. It's a great piece. And the editor just gives it to some kid who's like a new fact checker over the intern.
Yes.
And this kid, like, immediately he becomes obsessed with all the errors he finds.
Yeah,
it's
a very well-written article, but it's factually incorrect.
He took some liberties in the pursuit of art, as he would, you know.
Yeah, but a lot of the facts that are incorrect aren't necessarily vital to the overall message of the thing. They're ancillary facts a lot of times.
Well, that's a debate.
What
is important? In this age of fake news, really.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. I realized I hadn't seen an actual play in a very long time. I'd seen all these plays, these musicals, where you're just like, oh, it's The Lion King. But, like, I don't know. Who cares?
You would see Lion King.
You know what? With my family comes, you take your niece and nephew. But, like, it's
you
also.
You forget you can see a play. Because most things on Broadway, you think about Broadway in your mind, you think of musicals.
Yeah, you think of all these musicals.
Or you think of, Hamilton.
And they're not really mentally stimulating.
Producers.
It's current. It's awesome. It's awesome. So I'm excited to get
to it. The run ends in January 13th, I believe. So people, go see it.
Yes, but before you see it, studio!
Studio.
They're back. Play the music.
Studio.
Headphones. Our good friends from Sweden, they sent us these headphones before. They're awesome headphones. I think we had a bunch of listeners buy them last time. You guys need to get them again. They're these high quality wireless headphones. They come to you straight from Sweden, so you know they're high quality.
These are Stefan Edberg's preferred headphone.
Yes.
Whenever he goes out to play tennis, he wants to listen to some music.
They've sent us the Studio Vasa Bla. I think that's Swedish. B-A-S-A-B-L-A. Features cutting-edge Bluetooth 4.1 technology. Oh, none of this 4.0.
The 4.0 is crap.
No, we're at 4.1 now, baby. They're with multi-pairing capabilities. I think that means it compared to anything.
More than one device, yes.
Cap, they last for 8 hours.
That's
also good. That's a work day.
Now you can take your dog for a really long walk.
Yeah, you can go on an 8-hour. You can run a marathon.
You can.
Maybe two.
I don't think I can run a marathon in 8 hours, but people could.
People could.
Especially if you're cheating.
And you can put it on standby for up to 10 days.
10 days. Look at that. I don't know what that means, but all right. Sounds great.
Standby. You can put it, you know.
You don't have to charge it if you're not using it.
Exactly. Yeah. And they have an offer. First of all, let's get to the offers that they have. So these are super. Check them out on our website. If you go to lostamericapod.com, there'll be a link. Click the link. They'll take you to check out the headphones. Okay, so if you buy their headphones and at the checkout you put in Lost in America, LOSTIN America, it'll give you a 15% off 15% discount on any purchase.
Yeah.
So not only are they a great price, but then you get a 15% discount.
That's as good as they are, 15% off is better.
Yes.
That's what you're telling me.
I'm telling you that.
I'm going to go buy
a
pair.
Guess what? It doesn't end there.
Okay.
There's more. If you get them from now until the end of December, When you buy the headphones, you get a free gift box with every purchase.
So it sounds like a great gift for the holidays for those of you who are celebrating Christmas, because Hanukkah you missed out too late. But yeah. If you want to get people a Christmas gift, this is it. Get the gift box.
Yes. Studio, they are revolutionizing the way people see headphones, hopefully hear them as well.
Yeah.
They say see them.
That goes without saying.
Yeah.
That's what they say in Sweden.
Exactly. It's not just a tech device. It's an accessory because they look good.
They look good. You want to look good.
They're fashionable. So that's
if you're going to be shooting hoops, you know, before the game, everyone's wearing those Beats.
No.
Be different.
Get Studio. And everyone who bought them last time loved them. I heard people wrote back to me. We had the old pairs. They were great. They're sending us these new pairs. So I'm excited. Cap. But also one thing I want to get to. I was just in Detroit, Michigan.
Yes, you were.
Farmington Hills, Michigan is a suburb. There's no farms or hills in Farmington Hills. But also, I was there with Drew Fralick doing shows. We also went over to Windsor, Canada. I did my first ever show in Canada.
Hopped over the border, did you?
Hopped over the border. It was 35 minutes, including going through customs from Drew's house.
So they didn't give you a big show. It's easy to go over the border still.
It's easy to go over the border, but we stopped at the wrong spot because you drive over, and you kind of forget when you're driving across the border. And everyone, you don't realize you're leaving your country because everyone, they still speak English. They still look like you. Maybe. They still say hi like you. And you almost...
Say hi like you?
Hey, what's going on? It's not like, hola, ¿cómo estás? You know what I'm saying? Like, when you go to... I've driven in Tijuana. You understand what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
You're going to a different country.
Oh, yeah.
Going to Canada, you don't... It's like you get too casual with it. And we almost got shot. That's what I want to tell you. We were driving because it feels like going through a toll booth, basically. You stop.
Is it easy pass? You just fly through it?
Pretty much. You forget what you're doing. So Drew and I are in this conversation. Drew drives up to the border. And we get to the gate. And the guy's like, hey, guys, how you doing? We're like, hey, pretty good. The Canada guy, you know?
Yeah.
Canadian, I think.
Canada
they call
guy.
Him. Yeah, he goes, how you doing? We're like, good. He goes, is this your first time coming into Canada? And we're like, yeah, first time in a long time. He's like, yeah, I can tell.
First time, long time.
You didn't stop. He's like, you were supposed to. I could tell because you were supposed to stop 15 feet back from meters. Or
right. Whatever. Oh, meters.
15 meters back. You were supposed to stop. And we're like, oh, sorry, man. And he goes, yeah, sorry, man. You're lucky we didn't have our guns out. You'd be dead right now. And he goes, I'll tell you one thing. If you were on the other side of this border, they would have shot you by now.
Yeah. Well,
that's
the point.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're like, oh, sorry, bro.
Yeah, that's the Trump, tell Trump, pal, our border. He's basically complimenting our border guards.
Exactly.
They're doing a better job.
Yeah, he's doing a better job.
That guy's failure. Tell Trudeau.
Yes. So also, I was on 9 Mile. My shows were on 9 Mile. That's 1 mile more intense than 8 Mile. Look at you. You're sneezing.
I'm dying over here.
You can't even handle the 8 Mile.
So there is a 9 Mile.
There's an 8 Mile. There's a 9 Mile. Yeah, we were at 9.
What does that mean? It's just the amount of miles away from Detroit?
I don't know, but the streets, they're not creative enough to come up with street names, so they just name them. There's 1 mile, 2 mile, 3 mile, 4 mile, all the way up to like 25 mile or something.
Oh.
So we had lunch one day. I went to 8 Mile. We had Mexican food.
Mexican on 8 Mile?
Yeah, it was like El Loco, I don't know, restaurant or something like that.
Loco restaurant or something.
So that's all. Thank you, Drew.
Shout out to Drew. Future guest, hopefully.
Future podcast. He's got to come on when he comes to New York. He's going to be here in the spring, so he's going to be on. We'll get to Ants later. Sorry. Amazon.
Yeah.
Lots to promote. Amazon. It's Christmas time. It's the holidays. It's Kwanzaa. It's New Year's. After that, it's President's Day. Yeah. It's everything else. It's Arbor Day. You want it, when you're going to do shopping, you go to lostamericapod.com. Next to the studio banner, there will still be our Amazon banner. Click on that. It takes you back to Amazon. Do all your regular shopping. A percentage comes to us. It's fantastic. Everybody wins.
Yeah, and people, they are promoting the Kwanzaa in the schools. You asked me that the other day.
Good.
You said like on a recent podcast, you said, they still learn about Kwanzaa?
Yeah.
And because last week in school, Teddy, my son, had a Hanukkah poem, which was very nice.
Sure.
Where they had, it was like, oh, look at that. You're learning about Hanukkah. Like this week, a reading assignment.
Yeah.
But then this week, what did they do this week? Christmas. And he's all, you know, so they had Christmas this week.
Uh-oh, was he upset?
He was upset. And he said he
hates Christmas. He said he wanted. Teddy Kaplan is the war. He's the general in the war on Christmas.
He's the general in the war on Christmas. And
he's Pat.
He said that he figured out the clues. It was Santa, and he colored it in, and he ripped it up.
Oh my god!
And then, but anyway, so then he's like, and next week it's Kwanzaa.
Uh oh! And I better not let him hate Kwanzaa.
No, I'm not.
But very racist.
It made me feel like less good about the fact that they gave me a Hanukkah one, because basically putting Hanukkah on equal bearings with Kwanzaa, which feels
and Christmas.
It feels. Like they're, well, it feels like they're, now I feel
they're
like.
They're all three equal.
Wait, but they're patronizing the Jews and the Kwanzans, is what I'm saying. Because Christmas is all that's important, is what they're basically saying. Because they're saying, well, gave your Hanukkah early on, now we're going to save Kwanzaa. I don't know.
No, they're closing with Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa's the closer.
Oh, Kwanzaa's the closer?
Now you should be upset because Hanukkah's the opener.
Hanukkah's the opener.
Opening act.
Christmas is, you know. Clean up hitter Kwanzaa. Next week on the pod, I'll have to bring in the Kwanzaa poem.
Yes.
Because I'm dying to know what that is going to be, actually.
We should do Festivus after
Festivus,
that.
Festivus, yes. Yeah.
All right. Should we get to Lost in America?
Play the music.
Play the music. All right, we're back. Kaplan, I'm lost in America this week.
Yeah.
Here's what I've noticed about Americans is we love to give advice, like pretty much unsolicited.
Yeah, it's just like we run the world.
We run the world. Everybody mansplains. Women mansplain.
It's called Americansplain.
It's called Americansplain. I think the term mansplain, it's correct in its feeling and in its observation, but it's not just men. It's everyone loves to do it. Women, wives love to do it. To husbands, yeah. All the time. We all love to do it. It's human nature. It's human it's American nature.
It's really just called explaining or telling people. I don't know. Why is it a bad thing to tell somebody something if they don't know it?
Well, I think they think it's bad because they assume they already do know it.
Oh, okay.
But people love to give advice, right? Oh, what you need to do is this. You need to do this. That's why like self-help is great, because people love to like, here's how to get yourself back on your feet.
Right, and that I find way more offensive to me.
Way more.
Giving advice, because that's like you're not telling me anything that's like useful. As far as like, you're not teaching me something, you're interjecting in my life.
And it's always whatever they are into at the current moment. Like, ooh, you got to stop eating carbs. Like, you got to join, what's a fitness group? Or like, you got to do Zumba or something. There's always like something new that they swear is going to change your life. So like the height of this, I saw the other day, right? I saw a lady on the street, this white lady, giving advice to a homeless guy.
Oh, that was nice.
And her advice, I was just walking by, so I just heard a second of it. But her advice is just be yourself. Which is the most ridiculous advice I've ever heard in my life. Like, be yourself to a homeless person. First of all, haven't they, like, where, when? Is there a problem that they're too much not themselves and that they're too self-conscious?
Phony? I just haven't let go. I haven't done my dream yet.
That they're at their spin class, all the other people are judging them. Right. And
my dream is to be really successful, but I wanted to be this phony. I've been a phony homeless guy this whole time.
Yeah, they ended up down and out and on the streets because they weren't being themselves.
Wait, let me ask you, was she stopping to talk to him or like while she's passing by?
No, stopping. Like, they were in a conversation.
Did she give him money, at least, or food?
She must have just given him something, because they were in kind of a conversation, but in a real, like, he was sitting down and she was standing. So she's already in, like, the dominant talking position, and she was talking literally and figuratively down to him, right?
Okay.
Looking down. So he was kind of sitting there listening, and she's talking, and I just hear her say, just be yourself.
Right, and he's a homeless guy, so he literally, if he wants to prove he's homeless, he can't go in it. He can't walk away.
Like, he can't walk away.
He's got a... I don't know.
I think there's probably a list of other issues before just be yourself. Maybe Here's a job application.
Right. Maybe here. Yeah. Here's some food.
Here's a shower.
Clean up a shave. Yeah. Like I saw a guy the other day see a homeless guy, or he wasn't a homeless guy, but he was someone who was begging, and he said, "Let me see your ID. I can get you a job." And
yes.
And the guy ran away, and the guy's like, "See, he doesn't want work." But at least he was trying to do something. He wasn't giving him advice. He was saying, "I can help you."
Is there anyone? Here's my question: is there anyone in the history of humanity who everything in their life was going correct? They were a Fortune 500 company or whatever it is, even if it's a minimum wage job. Life's fine. And then you stop being yourself, and 2 weeks later, you're on the street homeless.
That's what happened to me. I ended up here.
Is that how you ended up on the Lost in America podcast?
Yeah, it's really dumb advice. It's so generic. Like, if you're going to take the time to sit down and I applaud anybody who stops and helps homeless people.
Yes.
If you're
going
to take the time to try
to
help.
Of course. Not there's anything wrong with that.
If you're going to really try to help them, like, give them practical advice.
Like, you, but here's what I would say. You know what? You do you.
You
that's
do
what
you.
That would be my advice.
You do you. Like, maybe that's what, there's a homeless guy I've mentioned on the podcast before, Roger in Long Island City.
Shout out.
He's himself. He does handstand pushups every day.
Oh.
He's got it. He calls it his home. He'll be like, he makes jokes. Like, you walk by, be like my new place, because he had to move down the street.
So maybe this lady was telling the guy, just embrace the homelessness.
Maybe he got that advice, yeah.
Maybe he wasn't being himself as a homeless guy.
And maybe this story happened a little bit ago, right?
Yeah, a few weeks, yeah. A couple months ago.
Because we were just talking to producer Celeste off air.
Sure.
And she was saying how she tried to feed a homeless guy food the other day, and the homeless guy rejected her food. So maybe this is the homeless guy who got this advice, be yourself, and he was emboldened to be like, I don't want your food. I don't like that food.
But she had a good point. People always complain about homeless people not taking their food, but producer Celeste has a good point that food might be you might be able to get food at shelters, but you can't get money, you can't get clothes.
You can't. You know what you can't get at shelters?
What?
Advice.
Advice.
How to live.
Be yourself. Kaplan, so, let's keep moving.
So let's live the way homeless people should live. Let's be ourselves today.
Be yourself.
The rest of this podcast.
We got some hate mail, Kaplan.
Oh, boy. Speaking of ourselves.
Play the music?
Play the hate music.
Don't hate me.
Great music. Love the hate mail music. This hate mail. Now, do you remember the Suzanne Lee Shepherd episode a few weeks ago?
It wasn't that long ago. I hope I remember it.
She used to live in Singapore. She talked to us about that. But also, she got on some jag about, we talked about Houston, and she was talking about how terrible of a town Houston is.
Right.
And we wondered, do we have any listeners in Houston? Well, it turns out we do.
Oh, good.
And
of
they're
course
not,
we do.
They're not very happy.
I didn't wonder. I know we have listeners in every major American city.
Ty Reasonover.
Mm-hmm.
Wrote us in from Houston. He said, "This chick Suzanne's shitting on Houston? LOLZ. Isn't she from Kansas? Please."
Wow.
Great point, Tyrese.
Great point. Although I got to defend Susanna because I remember things pretty well because it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
And I really shat on Houston first and she was following the joke.
Oh, was it you?
I shat on Houston.
Look at
and
you.
She then shat. She went to the, you know, I made a joke about rather be unemployed living in Houston.
Yes.
And then she like piggybacked on that. And so I like made her feel like it was a safe space
Look
to rip Houston.
And people blame the woman.
So they don't blame the woman. Blame me. I can take it.
You're the Justin Timberlake in this Nipplegate scenario.
I apologize to our... I know I want to host the Oscars one day, and
yes.
I don't want this to be used against me.
Sure.
So I'm getting out in front of this.
Tyrese
and
over.
Please go and delete that part of the podcast. I don't want to offend the people of Houston. I apologize. It's not who I am anymore. That's who I was then.
Okay.
Okay?
Even if we delete it, they'll find it.
Ugh, it's been time-stamped. I'm fucked. That's it. One of my dreams off the bucket list.
Ince is an app, people. You can get in the app store. It's the 5-minute audio recordings, voice messages. You can play an album. You can play if it's your personal.
If you want to make your homophobic statements that you don't want to be saying in air on Twitter,
do it there.
Do it now on Ince before it blows up.
And creativity.
And then it won't keep you from hosting the Oscars. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
that's Ince's mention.
Ince, that's it. They love
E-N-S-E.
It. I'm sure they're happy with that plug. Get it in the app store. Get it on Android. Get it anywhere you get your app. That's it.
iPhones.
I think I said the App Store. I don't know. Jeremy Kerrigan, he's roaming the halls.
He's roaming the hall. He just had some surgery, so
Hollywood
he's ready to barge into here now.
Big-timer, Broadway musical writer, Rich, newest rich person we know.
Libertarian Jeremy Kerrigan. Come on in.
I'm right here. Okay, here we go. Good.
If I go like that, that's what that means.
Lift and separate.
We're back with our guest, Jeremy Kerrigan. Jeremy, welcome back to
Hi.
The show.
Good to be here.
Look how different this man looks different than
He's
last time we saw him.
He's wearing a sport coat.
I'm wearing a sport coat. Is that the only difference?
You're
that's
Hollywood.
The only difference.
Gone Hollywood.
That's right.
Gone Broadway.
Broadway. Gone Broadway. Gone exactly. Broadway.
Fresh
last time you were on, you were working on play. I don't think this was on the horizon, or if it was, you didn't tell us about it.
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to talk about it yet.
Oh, top secret. So. He kept his word.
Yeah.
He knew this pod. It has a huge listenership, and it would have.
We call that the pod bump.
The pod bump. Oh,
you come
the pod
on
bump.
This podcast, things happen for you.
That's yeah. right. Now I'm a hit. This
you
is great.
You get a Broadway play with a big-time movie star.
Well, thank you, Lost in America.
Yeah. Daniel Radcliffe. The play's fantastic. We were saying just off-air, Cap's seen it. I've seen it.
What have you seen? What's the name of that?
Lifespan of a Fact.
Oh, yes,
Lifespan
it is.
Lifespan of a Fact. You got to work the name in, yes.
We were talking about it just 2 minutes ago before you came on.
Oh, got
we
it.
We told
right.
the whole audience everything about it. We set it up so that we didn't have to rehash it.
Although I'd have to re-listen
I'm
to
wasting
be
your time.
Sure that we used said the name.
We're professionals over here, Jeremy.
Ryan. I've gotten stern lectures from the PR people saying, you didn't make them say the name. Why didn't you make them say the name? I was like, that's why we're on. I figured that's why. No.
Well, while we're here, how do people get, so we don't forget, if people want to get tickets, there's still a few weeks left. How do
yes,
they do
there's
it?
5 weeks left as of taping. Do we still call it taping?
Yeah, pod, this comes out tomorrow.
As a pod recording. Podcast, what do we call this?
Actually, this comes out in hours from now.
Oh, yeah. As of the time of digitizing.
It's live.
So, right. So it's Presca Live. So, okay, you go to lifespanofafact.com. Spelled like it sounds, lifespanofafact.com. And you can still buy tickets. There's still a couple left. We only have 5 weeks left, but and there's not that many left, which is surprising.
That's how we like it. You're going to have to get them on the secondary market.
And we'll put a link out on our website because our audience can't really spell, so that lifespan effect.
Oh, that's a good idea. And Cap and I will sell, we'll scalp tickets.
We'll bark.
Yeah. We're going to buy them all up tonight, and then we'll resell them to you guys for double.
Nice. Right.
We got to make money on this pod somehow, Cap.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be like, if you want to go see this great play, hit me on Twitter.
Yes.
Finally, you found a way to monetize podcasting.
Exactly. So how did this idea, because on the surface, this is 85 minutes, no intermission, which I said is fantastic when you watch it. But it's 85 minutes, no intermission, three people breaking down a news story. How do you see that actual thing in your mind and be like, that's going to be a Broadway
that's
play?
A play. Yeah. I see a play about fact-checking and suicide.
I mean, it's not
that's
even...
That's going to be a thrillsville.
How do you have a Broadway play that hasn't already been a Disney movie? That part I don't understand. Step, yes.
This is going to come out in Pixar next year, by the way.
Animated version.
Disclaimer, not singles. Really on Pixar. This originally came to me by co-writer David Morrell, who has been my co-writer in a lot of different projects. We work together, we work apart, but he came to me and he said, hey, there's this book called Lifespan of a Fact that just came out, which I haven't read, but here's a book review. Why don't you read this book review?
Book review.
And we read the book review, and it was not a good book review. It was a very negative book review.
Oh.
But it
Look
was.
At that. You saw the.
But it had such a fever pitch about it. You'll notice that a couple of the people who've written about this play have gotten a little hot under the collar about it, and you know some people have gone to say that it's made them angry. To which I say, good, that's fine. But this reviewer was angry at the book, at playing with the truth the way we do. The book is called Lifespan of a Fact by John DeGatta and Jim Fingal, the name of the two people who are...
Right, and I didn't realize that.
The two people
the play.
Are depicted in the play.
In the play.
I went in cold. I didn't realize this until afterwards.
Can I ask...
That's good, because it's actually fictional. It's not... These are not those people, but go ahead.
Can I ask what upset this reviewer about the book?
I thought it was the intermission. No intermission, really bothering me. Had a pee.
About the book.
Well, a lot of times, when people write reviews of this book, they're coming at it from the perspective of a journalist. And if you're coming at it from the perspective of a journalist, it's not an argument at all. There's no such thing as creative nonfiction. It is bad that you play with the facts.
I see.
And people shouldn't play with facts.
So you're saying that a journalist should, every single detail needs to be correct. If there's 31 strip clubs versus 18 strip clubs in Las Vegas,
exactly,
you need to get the number right.
You got
to
get the number right. There's no excuse.
And in the play, you debate that, is that correct or not?
The
correct.
Book, you know, the book and the article in question are pieces of creative nonfiction, is what they're called, and that has different. It's like the different standards.
It's like, what was the memoir, James Frey memoir?
Like James Frey. However, they sold it. That's a marketing problem. Right. They sold it as nonfiction.
Right, yeah. That's the thing. Because people like, the part of it's the audience. Because a lot of people prefer a true story. Like, they want to read something that's a true story.
It's the market.
Boring.
So then, yeah, but no, but they want it to be creative too. But, yes. You know, like, so it's
they want it to be interesting. And just because it happened to you doesn't make it interesting.
Like a movie that's based on a true story, you know, like, so that's where it gets.
I don't know why that's so important for anybody. But it is. And it matters. So we looked at this, you know, and there were other people. We looked at other reviews of the book, and they also kind of got angry about it. Then we read the book and thought it was hysterical because they had kind of inflated their own characters considerably. They made John DeGatta, the character, who is not like John DeGatta, the writer, kind of this swaggering, angry Norman Mailer type.
And that's for our audience listening. That's the journalist who plays with the facts to get to the meaning of the story.
Right. Yeah. Or the essayist. He calls himself an essayist. And Jim Fingal is made into this kind of this weaselly and obsessive nerd. And to which we took both of those characters and added fabulism on top of fabulism. We even fictionalized it even more.
And in the book, correct me, I believe there's no editor. Right, in the book?
There's an editor who's in there for like half an email exchange,
okay.
And there's one line that she speaks. And the real editor's name at The Believer was named Heidi Julewitz, but we made up this editor. Sorry, Heidi, we made this one up. Right. I guess the one line she has in the book wasn't really her line.
But that's why I found that to be like, what was the rationale? Was how you need another character basically, or you just needed somebody to play off them? Because I thought she was a great character.
We wanted to structure it almost in the sense of it's almost like a courtroom drama, and you need to have a judge.
She was like, yeah, because she was kind of going both ways.
She was in the middle.
Yeah,
and she's also the audience too. You need to triangulate any kind of position in a play. You kind of need three points of view.
Yeah,
you can't or any piece of writing. You need.
That's what I'm missing.
And can I? So when this story came to you, was this after Trump got elected?
This was before Trump got elected.
Was Trump already going on, or was he not a thing yet?
He was not a thing yet. This came to us about 6 years ago.
Well, he's always been a thing.
Well, he's been a thing, but
not as a presidential candidate. So then, because
he hasn't been this tumor on our on our corpus.
When you watch this play, at least what I got out of it, there's like this unspoken thing that. This idea of playing with facts really relates to what's going on right now.
In a way, we were very lucky.
That's what was my question.
And in a way, we're incredibly unlucky. But, you know, in that we are stuck with Trump in order to get the play done. But, the play takes on some different overtones. But we think of, we think that these issues were important before Trump and they'll be important after Trump. To just lie about something and call it fake news, or to call it news and have it be fake, that's the easy part. We make changes in the stories of things just by perceiving them, or just by ordering them in a way, in a documentary or in a podcast, for instance.
We're 100%.
No, we are not. We don't. Nothing. Everything's correct.
Nothing's fake here.
Well, even say
Bush was really on.
Even say Serial, which is a nonfiction journalistic podcast. And Sarah, if you're listening, hello. She's going to see the play tonight. But she would also say that by
Sarah
Koenig, the host of Serial.
She's going to see it. Hey, shout out.
Shout out to, Big Pod.
Big Pod, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We don't like Big Pod over here.
She wants to come on. If she needs to promote her pod, she can come on here.
She absolutely would. Yeah. If I said the word, she would.
You got us Gary Johnson, so you can do – I trust everything you
say.
And
by the way, not to go off topic, but we did – I don't know if you're aware that we got Gary Johnson. The day he did the interview, he was at 8%. And what did he finish at?
16%.
There you go.
Boom.
Within a week.
Hot effect.
We doubled his polling. So, okay. So then this, so this is all sort of coincidence that Trump came about.
Yeah, but it's, the, you know, but also that we've been seeing this as a problem for some time, that, you know, that people are starting to lose faith with narratives that they're given. And truth is as strong as it ever was, and fact is as strong as it ever was, but we've got more of it. And
it's too much of it.
In some ways it is. If we get so much information, everything's worth less. So we thought this was going to be a problem, and it was a problem. Fortunately, just in time for production.
Yes. I mean, there are so many of those things in our society that have been a problem for a long time, and that the cartoon of Trump heightened it all.
It just made it worse,
right?
Exactly.
Or just like let everyone
It's never
see
been
it.
Like this before. Actually, it has, yeah. And the fact that you didn't notice it is why he's here.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's also like you say, you're just the too much information. Like I was thinking about watching about how now there's so much content. There's so many articles. It's endless. I have so many things open on my phone that I've never read and never read.
Content
but
is
the idea that's why I love this idea that like there's like some editor, some fact checker, taking the time to pour over all these details. Like it takes you back to a time that I wish still existed almost. Like yeah, just like
well, it exists.
There's so many errors in things.
Wait, Kevin, let me stop you. That the article that was just written about me by Ben Fox Rubin, who's a previous podcast guest for New York Magazine, he spent 3 months on it.
Oh,
and I'm not saying like every day, but he kept calling me. He would send it to his editor. His editor would come back to me. And I, in the middle of it, I saw your play. And then he was checking these little facts that had nothing to do with anything.
How many chucks there were in China?
It was like when you got that that permit from the local government, was that on a Wednesday or a Thursday? And I would have to go back and look it up. And I'm like, this doesn't have to do with anything.
It does.
But he was like, it does. And the editor of the New York Magazine, wants to know. And then I saw your play, and it was just hilarious. Like, literally the next day, we spent an hour on the phone going through all these tiny little facts. And I was like,
did you ever have a teenager jump off of a truck?
No. Did not happen. No.
Dan Radcliffe went into the New Yorker to basically intern as a fact checker for a day.
That's amazing.
To prep for the show. And there's a good online article about it. And it was... He was really good at it.
Yeah.
He was terrific.
Job.
He got one mistake, and that was that he didn't check the plural of one. He should have circled the plural of a word that, you know, said restaurant and said restaurants, and he should have circled the S to make sure that there was more than one.
Wow.
And it was at the end of this entire review.
Wow.
He apparently did a great job.
Great actor, great fact checker.
Amazing.
I could do it all.
The guy is quite brilliant, I've got to say. He is. He is dogged and just and brilliant in a lot of the ways that Jim Fingal is in the play. Dan's kind of like that, but maybe that's because it's the actor rubbing off on him. But he's fun to be around. He's an interesting
guy. And he can do an American accent. So.
I was going to say, and he sounds American.
That's what I'm.
That's what Kevin and I are most impressed with.
He really did sound American,
yeah,
and he
did.
Sounded. Generically American, you know, you knew he was from, you knew he was like not from a region. You knew he was probably like upper middle class, but you weren't sure entirely where. So you just kind of let all that go. It was a good, the dialect coach did a great job, whoever she is or he.
And so it's great. And so back to you and finding out
about
when did you find out this was going to be a Broadway play? And what was that like?
Okay, so this happened about 6 years ago when we first got this book, and we got the we took the book. David and I took the book to a producer I'd known, Norman Twain, and I'd worked with him a few times. We'd done a few spec scripts for him. He'd read David and our screenplay about 100 breast implants, so he knew that we were odd, but he was still willing to meet with us. So we went to go meet with the guy. And we, you know, David thought it should be a movie. I thought it should be a play, but I was thinking off Broadway because
selling yourself short.
We're nobody. We were literally nobody. And
you had done plays up until this point.
I'd done plays, but I'd done, you know, in other countries and regional theaters as readings and a couple off Broadway things here.
Rochelle.
Here and there. What?
Rochelle. No.
Rochelle. That kind of show. But the producer said, you're both crazy. This is a Broadway play. And we immediately said, yes, we agree. And he bought the rights to the book for us to do, commissioned us to write the draft, and it took us a couple of years to write the draft. And we got most of the way there to a really good piece. And we weren't all the way there. The producer couldn't see the end the way we had presented it. We end up in what you see on Broadway with roughly a similar ending to what we'd considered back then. But it's been through a lot of changes since that. So there was another writer who was brought on who made a very important change that allowed us, or allowed that producer to think it was ready. And then they sent it to Daniel Radcliffe. Then it's not so simple. The producer died 2 years ago, and we thought that was the end of the project. He'd helped us, you know, we'd worked on it in his office. We'd worked on it in our homes and whatever. We'd been to his house, his apartment, and Deanna, his wife and producing partner, had us over for dinner. It was great, but he died. We didn't know he was sick, and he was. And we thought that was the end of the project. And then Jeffrey Richards, the producer, said he would do Deanna Twain this favor of continuing to help the project. And he sent it around. And it got to Daniel Radcliffe, who loved it. So, yeah.
Wow.
And then you went back to the original ending after all that?
You know what? We've changed. David and I were there throughout rehearsal, so we were making a lot of changes throughout, and we had to kind of massage it, and we had to make sure that the actors were on board with it. It's not, you got to be there, and so, we were.
So when someone decides, so the producer is the person who decides it's going to be on Broadway, or how does that even happen? Who decides? Yeah.
The person that
get on Broadway.
Who gets the theater? What happens?
There's a relatively few number of producers who can lead produce a Broadway play, and that's the Broadway Theater League, I think they're called.
I was
something
wondering
like
about
that.
This. Yeah.
Relatively small amount of people who can do this. However, no one can do it without, you know, a couple million partners behind you. You know,
for money?
Money.
Okay.
You need millions of dollars to get a play to open on Broadway now. So you need it to be
to bribe people? What do you mean?
You need a bankable project. You need the kind of actor who will bring.
Got to pay the actors. I forgot about that.
Yeah, they don't. Dinner Radcliffe don't work for free.
I thought he was an intern. You said.
And you'll note that it happens to be in the center of Manhattan, which is not the cheapest. Right, exactly.
You have to rent the theater. You have to do everything.
We're taking notes because we're in an early draft of Lost in America, the Broadway play,
the musical.
Yes. So we need a third person. That's it. We have you and me. We need someone else.
Who plays producer Randy Lee?
Albert Brooks is going to sue the shit out of you.
Back to that group, that league of people who can do Broadway plays.
So the fact that the League of Broadway Producers, League of Broadway, I think that's what they're called. What's what their name is?
And they're literally sanctioned. It's a small group of people. It's like a
no. Those
bureau.
Are the number of people who have the right.
They meet in secret.
They meet in secret. It's like the Illuminati.
Yeah, I don't get it.
No, it's the it takes a lot of money and experience and talent and know how to get a play on Broadway, and you have to also have the ear of the people who own the theaters. So if they don't want to rent it to you, they don't have to rent it to you.
So it's ultimately up to the person who owns the theater.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of ways. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for step one.
I suppose, yes. And a lot of those people who own the theater are part of the Broadway League.
Because I always wonder, how does each play end up in the specific theater? It's because they've negotiated with...
Yeah, the same way any piece of real estate is rented.
Right.
Is it free? Is it right for our purposes? Does someone else want it during the time? The same way.
So, for example, it might be the producer finds the person who owns the theater, and then the producer also finds you, the playwright.
Right, and then they also find...
The producer's got doing a lot.
The producer's doing a lot. They got to find the actors. They got to find the designers.
That's your job, Cap. I'm not doing that.
It's more fun a movie producer or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah, movie producer...
The director's doing everything.
The lead producers of a Broadway show are the ones who are actually kind of really doing the work. And then there's a bunch of producers who are investors.
That's the kind of producers you want to be.
And then what about the theater? Because an added cool factor of your play is that it's at Studio 54.
I've never been cool enough to get into before. So this was it.
I didn't know it still existed as a theater until I got the
It tickets. Started as a theater. It was an opera theater, I think, to begin with. But I think opera and the
They
old...
left that part out of the movie. about Studio 54, the opera.
It became a disco after it was a disused theater. I think after it was a television soundstage for a while for CBS. After oddly enough, called Studio 52, even though it's on two streets, 53rd and 54th. But it was like the 52nd soundstage to open up, so it was called Studio 52.
You could find drugs in the seat if you look close enough. Like, look around.
You need drugs to get the address right. Yeah. Think, it's cool.
So you got Dana Radcliffe. That jump-started the project.
That's everything. I mean, once you have a star like that, the play will happen.
It's also kind of amazing that
I don't know anything about Harry Potter.
That Harry Potter, the play, is playing down the street.
It's not so amazing. The producers were brilliant because, you know, everybody who were worried about ticket sales, now everybody who's coming to see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, they'll be like, hey, we can actually see Harry Potter while we're here.
The real guy.
The real guy. Yeah, exactly. Well, the real guy.
I mean, the actor. Wait, whatever.
He's real. He's
real to me.
What's Quidditch really like?
So I've actually never seen Harry Potter.
So when you have a play like that where it's so reliant on, there's three actors.
Yes.
Do you have an understudy? Like, what happens
we have two understudies. One for both the male roles one for the female role.
That guy, that's a utility actor. Ooh. If I've ever heard of one. How do you play an understudy for two different roles and they're completely opposites?
They're very different roles. However, Steve Jones is
shout out.
He's great.
From The Clash?
Well, actually, no. His stage name, if I'm going to shout him out, his stage name is Maurice Jones.
Maurice, that's
as in people call, some people call him Steve. Maurice is his stage name.
Oh, okay.
But I'll tell you, he's one of like the five actors that could fulfill both bubbles in the Venn diagram.
Wow. Picture
a guy
just
who looks
weird.
A little bit like Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah, that's so drastically
Harry Potter.
Both of the understudies are African American. One is of Trinidadian descent. The other is just African American. And but we don't have a type for. We don't have like an ethnic type for these roles.
Right.
They're basically fictional to us. So that would have been fine.
And have they done any performances yet, or have the guys have been healthy? And
it's a short run. So yeah, I hope that they get a chance to do it, but I don't know if they will.
It's a crazy life being an understudy. You never know. You got to be ready at all times.
In the bullpen.
Been on the bench.
Wouldn't wish it on my enemies.
And how much lead up do they have? Could they find out like 10 minutes before?
Yeah, they can find out 10 minutes before.
That's
they got to be there.
Traffic.
Got to get loose.
Traffic.
Well, imagine being like, you know, you're 15 minutes into act one. Guy falls, breaks his leg. What do you do?
Really?
What do? Do you call the rest of the show?
Yeah, or you get out there.
Got to get out there. So
all right, you're black now.
I think one.
Do you have a joke ready to explain that if it happens? Like,
hi. I assume it'll just be an announcement.
Right. You got stuck in a tanning booth.
But then if the other character breaks his leg, then he's got to talk
to
himself.
We're screwed.
He's just having a.
If they're both sick, we're just screwed. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I have questions about the run of the show.
Yes.
So how long it's total going to be?
16 weeks, including the 4 week previews. So we've only 5 weeks left.
So that's like four months.
Turner doesn't know how many weeks are.
I'm not good at math.
Let me put it in terms of the Napoleonic calendar.
Speaking of Year of the Dog.
Right. Great.
What year will it be in when the play runs to?
So did you know that going in?
Yeah. I mean, these are three incredibly busy actors. So they all have other projects. The theater is booked afterwards. It's a limited run.
Maurice Jones has things to do.
But my question is, because this play has been basically packed the entire 16 weeks.
Yep.
But what happens if 2 weeks in, there's like no one cares about Harry Potter. There's like 12 people there.
We'd have to cancel the show.
Does happen.
Yeah, that happens. We had a lot of pre-sales in this, so it was never really a danger. And we're on track. As far as I know, we may have already. I don't keep track of this. We're on track to make a profit, which is
awesome.
Bizarre for a straight play on Broadway. Although this year there have been a few. We've been doing pretty well.
So most of the things that make money are musicals.
Yeah, most of the things that make money are musicals. And even they don't make money.
Musicals based on movies, really.
Based on something that everyone already knows, right?
Usually.
That's what I was saying to Kaplan before you came in, is that I think this is the first time in a long time, I almost forgot that a Broadway play didn't have to be some big musical of something I already knew. Like when I went to see Lifespan Effect, it was refreshing to be like, oh, this is something new.
Well, and not only that, it's never been performed elsewhere.
Yeah.
We did not do out-of-town tryouts. We didn't do a regional run. We didn't do workshops. You know, it was, I think we had a total of 3 readings, and one of them was with Daniel.
Yeah, because they often do, I know they'll do like a run in New Jersey somewhere or somewhere.
Some
right?
sort
like
of some, developmental
workshop. Yeah, so
they could see,
work on how the play is before they bring it
to
Broadway.
Didn't do that. Yeah. That's... Which is a tremendous vote of confidence on, you know, from the producers, but it's also scary as hell.
Yeah.
Like, we know we like it, but we don't know that
yeah,
the audience
we'll
is going to like it. Yeah.
But you come out of it feeling it's so, it feels very current. That's why I'm surprised that you guys did it 6 years ago. You knew you were going to do it because it just feels like, as opposed to, you know, you see Cats or something and you're like, you're seeing it because like your parents want to go and they're in town. And
I fell asleep when
Cats.
I saw Cats.
I did too.
I woke up with a cat like on top. I was like, I had a good seat. And it was like, Callie,
ah, Bob Tucker! Jesus! Get out!
And you're seeing this like something from the 80s. You feel like the music's old, everything's old about it. And then yours, it's like they're talking like emails involved, all these things that you're like, well, this can't be that old. You know what I mean?
That's right. We even mentioned Reddit and
that's why he's better than Hamilton.
Yeah. Better than...
There's no email in Hamilton.
Hamilton feels very dated.
Very dated.
What's this quill there?
Do some more time in Jersey. Working on...
Did Pence show up at yours? Did you have to stop the play and have the actors plead to Pence?
We didn't have to, no. Although, supposedly, we've invited Trump, and I couldn't care less if he shows up or not. I mean,
85 minutes, a little too long for him to go.
Yeah, I can't.
He doesn't have that attention.
He doesn't have the attention span of...
You do like a turbo version.
And they make you turn your phones off, so...
That's right.
If you can't tweet.
Ridiculous. I hate these people.
That would be sad.
Sad,
right. It's been fun and it has been easy, surprisingly. And the director and the producers took us aside the first day and goes, it's never this easy. And this is, you know, having 30 years of nothing going anywhere, I recognize that. But.
Is your job done when it starts?
Yeah.
Really? So do you go? How often do you go to the play, or do you are you just like opening night?
And... You know, I've seen it enough, so I don't need to see the whole thing.
You like check in and walk around and just hit laughs,
get a cocktail, sit in the back.
Yeah, I wrote that.
I noticed one of your conjunctions was off, Cannavale. So no, it's there's a time when you can kind of tell from the actors that playwrights really aren't welcome anymore, that we don't need to be there.
Oh, really?
And not welcome.
Not welcome?
Not welcome.
Sometimes, yeah, because they don't want to be judged, you know? They're still trying to find stuff.
How do they know you're there?
They know.
They
don't miss
they
him.
They know. I mean, they know. I am in the back of the house.
Like, because I'm drunk and screaming at them. I'm like, you said it wrong.
Yeah, fuck it. I fucked
up my line.
And Cherry Jones, now, Jeremy, I could tell when you're in the house. And I'm like, what? I didn't even laugh this time. He goes, I know. I heard you not laughing. And I'm like, oh, shit. So, yeah. No, they were, each of them were great, and they were all great together and fun and pleasant. But there's a time when actors kind of have to play and they look on playwrights as this, that could be a judgment zone.
Got it. So one suggestion I have for you, because Ron...
Oh, wait a minute. Let me get my notebook out.
Your notes out.
Rewrites. This is big. This is okay.
Big note.
To your continued success, Ron Chernow lives in my neighborhood.
Oh.
And I'm here to break news. I think Hamilton's son has set, because I saw him the other day walking around my neighborhood wearing a Hamilton t-shirt.
Uh-oh, it's just the sharks jumped.
I think he wants to be recognized. Oh, he doesn't get as much recognition.
How do you even know that's him? How would you recognize him?
He lived next door to me in my old apartment. And all the neighbors, when I moved in, they're like, oh, I wouldn't have recognized him. But they're like, that's him.
But now he's doing the White House Correspondents' Dinner or whatever?
I guess he's
huge.
This was about a month ago. He's wearing his own t-shirt. So
like,
whenever
does he have to get like a routine for that?
Yeah.
Or is
you got to write him some jokes.
The White House Dinner?
Yeah, because everyone's...
I don't know, but I think he should do the Oscars as well. Anything that it's like we don't want a comedian,
have we looked at his tweets though? have you checked his old tweets?
That'd be awesome.
If your play gets continued success, you're going to be next up.
Great.
Let's get him on the pod.
You would be amazing, White House correspondent.
Yeah, I probably because I pretty much no one there would agree with me. That would be good.
That'd be awesome.
The alt middle.
Yeah. Kaplan and I could write your speech. You can hire us.
Do you guys know Gary Greenberg at all? He does some of the stuff for the Emmys, and because he writes for Jimmy Kimmel. And his every once in a while he'll call me and ask if this joke plays among libertarians, and I'm like,
they care?
Who cares? That's like two of us.
If the joke plays, that, we don't even in trouble.
Yeah, we don't even show up in the Nielsen ratings. What do you care? So, but he's a nice guy and he likes to get things right.
Oh, that's good. You make libertarian humor. Speaking of jokes, I want to know the first 5 to 10 minutes or so of the play.
Yes,
are there good jokes? Is it because I missed it? I was stuck in traffic. I want to know what
Kaplan
I missed.
Kaplan pulled a Kaplan.
Oh, I should throw this microphone
he's late
down.
To everything.
It was actually the pod's fault, but yeah, I was late, a little bit late, and then they wouldn't let us in. They made us sit, so I was like watching on the screen.
What part did you come in?
And like I couldn't hear it because the people were laughing. So it seemed like it was funny.
Good.
That's what I really should have said. I should have led with that. Because people were laughing
open
so hard.
Open with that next time.
I couldn't have heard what they were saying. And I was like, I'm missing good stuff. I was getting all angry. I was giving them the evil eye. Let me in, ushers. Don't you know who I am?
So I that think always
it's just that
well
introduction when he's getting.
Don't you know who I am?
Yeah. It's when he's
how
getting.
How would they know who you were?
I was wearing a shirt that said host of the Lost in America podcast here to review the play. And no, it was the part where he's getting the assignment originally.
That's the first. You missed the first scene.
Yeah, I missed the first scene, basically.
So yeah,
it is kind of important.
So I'm gonna come back.
Well, you get to learn a little bit that he's a bit of a weirdo, and that's a bit, and that's and you also know that she expects some wavering from the truth, and you don't realize how the rest of the play would have seemed slightly less funny just without that setup. That's it.
It's premise.
I'm going back. I'm going to go see it again.
Go right, see good. It again.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm coming.
You should.
If I can get a ticket, I don't know. We'll see
that's
if I can get one.
Hard to do.
I'll sell to you on the street.
Exactly.
I'm going to sell to you for more now.
Yeah.
So more questions.
Yes.
This play, it seems like a play that you don't have to be from anywhere to like the play, meaning it's not specific to
identity.
No, I mean like country. Like my question is, and going back to this podcast, can this play be? I feel like this play could be taken to any country in the world.
We've already had a number of international requests.
Great.
You know, we should hopefully have some good news about a Spanish translation soon. Wow. We've had a couple people from lots of other countries that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, and I keep wanting to.
Yeah.
But they're.
Would they find like a story, like a specific local story that.
I don't think you would have to.
Or just go with that. Yeah.
They would just translate it into. It would take place in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
And
you don't have to know anything. It's like I was watching from that perspective. I'm like, you could. This exact play, without changing a word, you could do in most countries. I mean, probably any country around the world.
China?
It's about humanity. It's not about like where it is or where. The facts are like Vegas, but it's not about that.
It's not about, and if you don't know, if you've never been to Vegas, it's not going to be less good of a play.
Exactly.
I mean, a country without a free press, it might seem a little.
All you have to know is they have strip clubs in Vegas. Everyone knows that in the world.
That's a good point. If you go someplace with doesn't have a free, you know.
But then it's like the government official is the character. Who's
truth is what Pravda say is truth. It's simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might actually be hard to put on in China because of that. They might think it's like a dig on them or something, but I don't know. Maybe not.
I don't. Yeah, that's the thing is they get personal. I know they get.
They think everything's
personal.
About them.
It's about right. Well, they have a right. There's 2 billion of them.
So you might. So this will like. So that's my other question. After a
1.3 billion,
Broadway,
says the fact 1.3. Checker. That's what the fact checker here says.
1.3.
Isn't that it
in China?
How many
no
people?
Way.
It's 2 billion.
Way more now. 1.5. I would say.
Oh, okay. Our maps all. We have an interactive map at home.
And are you counting Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Singapore?
We count on this podcast
and undocumented
Taiwan.
Undocumented workers who are Chinese.
Right. Or undocumented births, of which there are plenty because of the one child rule.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
You know what I learned from Turner last week off air?
What?
Did you know this?
Maybe.
You could have got around the one kid rule. There was a loophole.
Be powerful?
Have twins.
Have twins. Oh, is that a way around?
I asked him. I said,
wait, both of those would be okay. Either answer is acceptable.
I was like, do you have to choose one in the womb? Like,
no,
twins.
You can twins. Have twins.
It's a loophole.
So were they okay with a fraternal or... Like, would it be like...
No, it didn't have to be identical.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Really pull
they
up.
Figured this isn't your fault.
Yeah, exactly.
They think everyone...
So that was like wildly
anyway.
Lucky. No. If you have twins, you're seen as the luckiest person on earth.
Wow.
So can people take those drugs that are more likely to give you twins?
Yeah,
I would assume those are illegal, but I also am pretty sure people did do that.
Yeah, but also it helps you get pregnant.
I can't say for sure.
If you're trying to fight population growth, fertility... pills are probably not on your side there.
Yes, yeah. They're probably not.
Black market fertility pills.
That's a business.
Back alley fertility pills.
Isn't that like powdered ram's horn and things like that you can, like things that like bear gall.
Gives you a boner?
Yeah, they claim that it gives you a boner.
Powdered ram's horn?
It probably just gives you cancer.
It's all that kind of stuff.
I thought you were saying use the ram. I don't know what you're
No, but I mean, there's all these fertility there's all these fertility treatments in China that are causing...
Oh, like Chinese medicine ones.
Right.
Yes.
So those are allowed, I think.
Well, these are the ones that don't work that also are killing that are killing endangered species, like tiger something.
There's yes.
Tiger bone,
and not only not
tiger
bringing tiger us people, they're killing endangered species? That's...
Well, you have to kill the tiger to get their
to get more Chinese people
to get a boner to kill more tigers to keep the boner.
There's not a single.
Oh my God, it's a never ending situation.
You get a boner from killing the tiger, and
that's
then
why they had to relax the whole policy. It's, yeah.
It's just easier.
Yeah.
Too many tigers killed. Otherwise.
This is the next play.
This is the next play. So yeah, but anyways, yes, we've had a number of
lifespan
foreign...
of a tiger.
So you have a ram's horn.
26 years. It's a very short play.
Sorry, I didn't cut you off. Go
so
ahead.
Anyway, no, we've had a number of inquiries. And there's going to be a number of productions. Who knows? We'll see how it goes.
So this could go all around America. This could go around the world. So basically, you're on Easy Street now.
Yes, this is...
All around the world.
I knew that we were doing pretty well when our agent started referring to the play, not as a script, but as an annuity. So
whoa. Yeah, baby.
Look at that.
Ching,
annuity.
Ching.
Thank you, Elaine.
That's it.
Yeah.
So you're working on more... Do they want more plays? Is that...
No one has said they want anything else yet.
What about a movie?
It's coming.
Movie version?
I don't think there's going to be a movie version just because I don't think it's that kind of script. It is a play. You see it, you go, that's a play. That was a play. If I see it on television, I could break something. It wouldn't be right.
It has to be more action-oriented.
Action-oriented? Jim like Fingle.
They start brawling. Yeah.
There's no love interest.
There is no love interest.
They have to have both been exes with that editor in the movie version. Yeah.
Where's Zooey Deschanel in this?
It is so un Hollywood. You know,
yeah.
There's not even much closure in the play. But there's no love interest. Yeah, right. If you want to go, if you want to know what happens, you're going to see the wrong play. But it's no love interest. It's just based on the moral problems and the dilemma and. I can't see Netflix breaking down our door for this kind of thing.
It's one of those things that you watch it and then you're talking about for the next few days with the person you saw it with.
That's what we want. That's one of the reasons we also didn't want an intermission is because we wanted people to go out and have a drink afterwards and chat about it.
I didn't have a drink. I screwed. I failed. I failed everything. I was late. I didn't have a drink.
You showed up late. You left early. You didn't have the required dosage of alcohol.
I was just very nervous about going in, about having to pee. So I was I was more focused on going to the bathroom at the restaurant before we left, and we couldn't get a cab. It was my fault. The intermission really screwed everything up.
We got cocktails. We got drinks.
The third preview, some woman gets up in the middle of the show, angry, and stumbles off, and we thought, and she's in house seats, and we think, oh God,
something important.
Did someone have a suicide in the family or something? And are they pissed off? And who knows what anybody's going to get pissed off about today? They'll get pissed off about anything,
right?
And then she just slams open the door to the lobby and just vomits in the lobby. I was like, all right.
And that's like to say house seats are where that's where we were sitting. Those are the important people.
So do we.
But that means she was connected to somebody in the show. Or she's connected to somebody important.
Or, right.
And she's vomiting in the hallway.
See, right. So, whoever you are, whoever paid for your escort fees, I'm really upset that you
should have stand-in audience members who are ready to take the seat filler.
Do people heckle at Broadway plays, or is that just comedy shows?
You know, some people do occasionally. There are people who will say things that they don't realize they're in an audience. I don't know if it's because they've had a couple to drink, or, you know, there's a bit of a moment where people think that what they think they know may not be true, and someone will occasionally say, oh my God, he's an asshole, and they'll just say it and everyone will laugh around
they forget where they are
yeah.
Or they in comedy sometimes they think they forget you're not talking to them directly, you're talking to like the whole audience, and they'll respond to what you're saying.
It's the John Lennon problem. Your words were speaking right to me.
Oh yes, exactly.
If you go see Frozen, people in the audience are talking.
That's right.
Ruby's belting her, singing along, and just
unfortunately, we went to see King Kong, and we were talking throughout that.
Yeah. And there was, did you see Frozen?
We haven't seen Frozen.
It got pitch silent at one point, and Teddy just looked up and he goes, "Anna's a poopy head." And I was like, "Oh my God, we gotta get this kid out of here!"
Oh, don't take Teddy to see.
Yeah, he's heckled
of
Turner. He's heckled Anna.
Nice.
Turner got a little lost. To speaking of talking to the audience, he got hit with the. We both got hit with the. Where they come after? There's a certain time of year in Broadway where they ask you for money.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the Red Bucket Follies.
What, can we find out when that is so we don't go to see plays during that? Because neither of Turner or I want to get asked for money.
For more money after you've...
More
you've
money! Got,
and it's,
I just paid $150 and, bucks for these tickets!
And as someone who gets really invested in a play, I don't want to see the actor break character right afterwards and act like a person and
don't.
Start auctioning off things to me.
Stop that bowing! Stop that bowing! Right. The character wouldn't bow!
Yeah, the character... all of a sudden, it's Harry Potter. I mean, it's...
I'm glad you brought up Red Bucket Follies. That's the annual campaign of... Equity, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And
it's a good cause, I'm sure.
It's a very good cause, especially now as that we have AIDS in our sights and we're able to help, we're able to help with protease inhibitors and people need these expensive drugs. But Lifespan of a Fact made the most of every straight play.
No thanks to Kaplan.
No thanks to you.
Or me.
I think Randy actually gave him $5, so we might have contributed something.
Because Dan and Bobby and Cherry come out and they auction stuff from the set.
Yeah.
And
it's great because he's signing. I mean, obviously, people want the Harry Potter signature.
And it worked. Man, we...
And I said to them, where's the Kerrigan one? Where's the poster with you?
I would have, Kerrigan was out there. I would have gotten it out of there.
I'll sign whatever you want.
Yeah. So if I would have, I should have signed one so then I could bring it over. Have you sign it right now? But
yeah, well,
I apparently don't care enough about stopping AIDS. Just the headline here.
All right. Well, we got a few weeks left of the show.
Yep.
Go see it. Lifespanofafact.com.
Yes, that is correct.
Get your tickets. It's awesome.
You really fun. We loved it.
You
for news?
Around?
I love news.
This guy, we can't do the news without us.
That's why we brought you on.
I know from news.
It's all to get to the news. Play the music.
Play the music.
First news story of the week, Kaplan. This comes to us from Fox News.
Oh, Fox News.
But it's also from all over the internet.
Yes.
Nebraska elementary school principal bans candy canes, saying J-shape stands for Jesus.
This is a war.
It's a cane. It says so in the name. It says cane right there.
But isn't it more like an R-shaped? Isn't it upside? Wait, which way does a candy cane go? Is it J-shaped?
It's not a J-shape. It's a cane shape.
It's a cane.
It says cane right there. I look at it.
I thought it stands for Jew, so.
If it was Jesus, it would be a cross.
Yeah.
Would it not?
Can you have candy crosses? That's kind of weird. That's Easter, isn't it?
Well, if you really wanted to hit the nail on the arm. She says, here we go. The candy canes were prohibited because Principal Jennifer Sinclair deemed them to have religious significance. She says, historically, the J shape is for Jesus, the red is for the blood of Christ, and the white is a symbol of his resurrection. And then
really?
She goes on to say,
is this
like
true?
The smuggest left-wing, this is a classic smug left-wing. She goes, I feel uncomfortable that I have to get this specific, but for everyone's comfort, I will.
That doesn't make any sense.
Who's
I'm uncomfortable.
Comfort? She's like, I feel bad that I know more than all of
right.
you.
I'm going to ruin candy canes for you.
Not to tell her own religion, but Jesus was not spelled with a J. It was spelled with an I.
Great point. Right. It's not in English.
It's in Greek. It's not. It wasn't a J.
Were they at the Last Supper? Did you pass out candy canes?
No, they didn't.
Oh, they're kosher for Passover as long as there was no corn syrup in them.
Oh, right, exactly. Well, but it's not Passover. It doesn't matter.
Kaplan, I know how we saw this because Kaplan's son Teddy is 6 years old, yeah. And he's definitely afraid of all things Christian.
He hates Christmas trees.
You are training this child well.
He hates Christmas.
I talked to him last week. I've dialed it up a little too much. He told his friend this week, his best friend is Christian. He told him he hates Christians and he hates Greeks.
Oh, no.
He hates Greeks.
Yeah, because of Hanukkah. Because the Hanukkah story, he's like, we killed them.
Yeah, but actually, they were also fighting against Hellenized Jews, too. So...
Well, he doesn't.
Us kind of Jews come along too well.
Teddy's been radicalized.
Teddy's very radicalized.
He's a new Maccabee.
He's a real Maccabee.
So here's my point.
Yeah.
The way we want to test if this candy cane thing is for real, get Teddy a candy cane. If he freaks out and throws it away, then it is Jesus. If not, then it's
then it just means Jew.
He's a prominent. That is a good test because he does love candy, but he's death. As
could
I said,
you, could you put it like on your jacket? Like instead of a yellow star.
Yellow star. That would be, but that's, it does raise the question about the line. Cause like, what is like, cause with my kids, I don't even know what's Christmas music. Like it's Jingle Balls, Christmas music, Jingle Balls. Like it's like Jingle.
No, it's a winter song.
It's a winter song.
Winter song.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the thing.
Like, you know what's a really good Christmas song is White Christmas by the Jew Irving Berlin. That's a great one.
Sure.
So you can eat a candy cane, sing that song, and it's not condoning Christmas?
I don't know.
I've grown up in a Christian religion my entire life. I've never heard of this, the red meaning the blood.
That is absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It was in the Talmud. No.
It's in the Talmud?
I don't know.
She's also banned other decorations, including Santa, Christmas trees, reindeer, and any green or red-colored item.
What's the green? Is that for Santa's Martian blood?
I guess she's decided that's Christmas.
Why is green bad?
Green and red.
Green and red. I mean,
the color scheme
green and red. You can't have anything green and
can't
red.
Can't have anything green and red. She said. She's also been fired. So
yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, I have a question for you since we're talking about Santa. Is that I don't know if this is how the kids are doing it these days, but Ruby, my daughter's a little more into Christmas, right? So she wants to do Christmas and Hanukkah because get more presents,
right?
Sure. So she goes. I heard her the other day. She was playing with her Barbies and they're playing Christmas, and she's like, "Okay, I'm gonna text Santa my list." She picked this up somewhere at school or something. You text Santa's on a phone now? You don't have to write. You can't even handwrite a list.
You don't have to write a letter.
Yeah. You don't have to write a letter anymore. It's
21st century Santa.
It's falling apart for you guys. I mean, come on.
I knew pretty fast. Like, I grew up, my father's not Jewish. He's Armenian, but sort of grew up in the Church of Christ in downstate Illinois.
Downstate.
Downstate Illinois. You know
I know what that means.
It's like we would call upstate.
Okay.
Not Chicago.
Right.
So I grew up with both traditions in my household too. And my birthday is December 1st. And I realized pretty quick, I just got sick of presents really fast.
Wow.
I was like, this is a pain in the ass for you. And I was like 9. I didn't want
You were getting Hanukkah and Christmas presents?
Hanukkah, Christmas, and birthday.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I guess we're going to have Hanukkah because we're in New York City. Then Christmas and then Chinese
New
Year.
You're getting your kids Hanukkah gifts? Just being in New York City.
Then you just shoot them with some fireworks.
Then Chinese New Year.
I mean, because Hanukkah was early this year and my kids are already complaining that it's over. And Ruby's like, I wish we had more gifts for Christmas. Like, and I'm like, but you just had
Hanukkah.
Yes.
Gotta keep it moving.
That's what you should do. After they get all their presents, you should blow them all up for Chinese New Year.
Blow them all up and give them a candy cane.
That's a great idea.
For Jesus' blood.
Exactly.
Next news story. CNN, we're sticking with CNN. Instead of apple juice, children at a Hawaii preschool were served pine sol by mistake, according to a Hawaii department.
Did they not notice the piney scent?
Well, let me say.
Yes.
The reason why I'm reading this story is because this exact thing has happened to me before, but with mouthwash. When I was living in China and I couldn't read Chinese, I was at a 7-Eleven at like midnight or whatever.
And it said in Chinese, please don't drink this. It's pine sol, not mouthwash.
They had the mouthwash right next to the pine sol made by the same company.
Oh, no.
Same company that makes it was blue mouthwash and then that yellowish pine sol, which also is mouthwash like, in America.
Or Listerine color.
Listerine color. I took the yellow one. And then I went to sleep. I had to get up early the next morning without putting my contacts in. I threw it in my mouth. I swished it around, and my mouth started burning. I spit it out.
But just look at that shine.
How was your breath?
I had no taste buds for a week. I'm not kidding.
Wait, so you were walking around with it? Did you not smell it? Nothing? Like,
I woke up. I opened the bottle. I put it in my mouth without smelling. I swished it around like you would mouthwash.
You've missed a key safety procedure.
Looking?
Yeah, looking, smelling. Don't just open bottles and put them in your mouth.
So I did that. I spit it out. I was like, that tastes weird. I turned the bottle around, and it had a picture. It was all Chinese, with a picture with a lady mopping. And I was like, oh, no. And then my mouth started burning. I went straight to the doctor, and they all started laughing at me. I took the bottle.
Oh, Americans do this all the time.
Yeah, and then they're like, you'll be fine. And then they just told me to go home, and I had no taste buds for a week.
So you couldn't tell other poisons that were coming into
exactly.
Your
exactly. And after like 4 days or 5 days of no taste buds, you really start to think they're never coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, it really
especially
gets
in
scary.
China where everything...
it's like day 8, you can start to taste.
Did you go to a doctor?
I did. I went straight to the emergency room.
I mean, what did they say?
They literally laughed at me.
Did your sense of smell go away too? Did you experience anosmia?
I don't think so. I don't remember. But it was by like day 7, if I put on a ton of hot sauce, I could taste a little bit.
And this is when you reach the point where you're like, I wish I lived in America. Because if you did that here, you could sue.
Oh,
someone,
exactly.
7-Eleven, someone.
I like how you're like, if I put on a ton of bleach, I can taste it.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't healthy. But yeah, you're right. I could sue. I'd be with Kerrigan on Easy Street.
I'm a father of a preschooler, and
as
a father of a daughter, I'm thankful she doesn't like. She does like apple juice. Shit. I'm gonna make a note to the school. I don't want them serving apple juice at snack time. Too risky.
Apple juice is not. Well, then they're just gonna get white paint.
Oh, white paint. So what's a safe thing that could be mistaken? Chocolate milk?
Is water. That could be bleach.
Could be vodka?
Like vodka. Oh, anything could be something else. Just smell what you're going to drink or at least have two people check it.
That be in like first day of teaching school? Or like,
don't serve the kids Pine Sol. Yeah, sure.
I have no sense of smell, so I'd be. There's another reason I can't be a preschool teacher. There's a long list of reasons.
I have a friend of mine who was a boxer and he's got his
including your criminal record,
including the fact that you're on this.
That
list
was expunged
here.
From the record. That thing you're talking about,
including you have to go door to door when you move to a new neighborhood.
I'm gonna give up Pine Sol for Halloween next year.
I'm here to tell you, I just can't smell.
Last thing on this story, this person got fired, which I don't agree with.
Because who was it?
Only slightly poisoning the preschoolers?
It was a classroom
mistake.
That's a mistake you don't get back.
Well, this is a classroom assistant, so that's the key. That's like they're not tenured.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if the teacher did it, there's no way they're getting fired for that.
It goes to show you the real value an education degree can hold.
Last news story of the week from the Washington Post, you guys. Congratulations to both of you. We have one more Jewish person in Congress.
Yes.
Who? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez reviews her Jewish ancestry at a Hanukkah
She's
celebration.
She's walked this back since.
I'm glad
she did?
Yeah, she did. She said, well, we're from Puerto Rico, and we were made up of a lot of people who are, and I realize that DNA is not culture, and I'm considering...
Oh, you know, but that's why she's walking it back, because she got Elizabeth Warren on this.
Oh, well, yeah, totally, because it's just not
like, it's
not
offensive.
True.
Pocahontas.
Which was, I was going to do
what's
that.
Jewish,
I was
going to
do
Jewish
that. When I saw
Pocahontas?
This news story, I was going to do that as a joke
Foses?
Stick.
What?
Foses?
Foses. We got to start calling her Foses.
No, it's like, yeah. There hasn't been a Disney Jew, so there's literally hasn't been
The
one.
Fosen?
So you have nobody to go to. But, yeah, I was going to do that as a shtick. I didn't realize that's actually what happened to her.
What?
That people are offended, probably.
People were offended, yes.
Fake offended, yeah.
Well, because also the stupid crap she said about Israel.
Yeah, I don't like that she did this at Hanukkah. You know, it's like she's trying to cash in on some presents or something.
I get this horrible feeling that she's just a garden variety narcissist and everything has to be about her.
Ding, 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 ding.
We were talking about,
she's on Twitter more than Trump.
Exactly. It's just not.
And every time I say, I don't even follow her, but every idiot comedian in New York retweets her all the time because they all love her.
Oh, they love her.
And
I'm sure.
She's in my feed on Twitter all the time, and every time I see it, it's never just like, hey, vote on this, hey, go support this congressman or whatever. It's like
nothing has ever been more important than this moment that we are at right
her,
now.
Wait,
and
no, it's always narcissistic
about her dress code.
I
making her wear this.
I didn't come to Congress to be nice. I'm like, well, no, you haven't come to Congress yet. That's the first of the year. And secondly, the people you're being asked to be nice to are people who are in your own party. So
she's flipping out about everything.
You have a good point with the narcissism thing, because it's like there's an article about Paul Ryan and she's like immediately makes it about her, all she was treated differently. Or there's a thing where some person innocently thought, because, you know, it's an accomplishment. She's 28 or whatever, or 27.
If you're running for Congress, you are probably a narcissist.
Right. But in the fact that they thought she was an intern, that's like a compliment that she looks like she could be an intern and she would have got elected. Like, she's young. Good for you. But that's like this whole thing. Yeah.
You're too attractive to be one of these idiots.
But I do want to say this. She may have listened to the pod or someone sent her a thing.
Ooh.
She might be coming from the middle because that Julia Salazar, she's pulling the Julia Salazar. She's pretending to be Jewish. We're big narcissists.
Oh, yeah, we are.
So we might have to
endorse
her.
Well, she's going to be my my representative.
Oh, you who? Salazar?
I didn't vote for her. No.
AOC?
I don't even think I voted in that election. No.
That's why she won.
That's why she won. Was there a libertarian running against her?
No, there wasn't.
Joe Donnelly, no libertarian.
But I think it was Joe Crowley.
Oh, Joe Crowley.
It was as the Working Family Party. But, I mean, the whole reason she won is because he never bothered to show up. He lives in Maryland. He used to come back once a year to ask for money. He doesn't even do that anymore. So that's why she won.
It's a new day.
That's the lesson. We did the election recap already. Was there any libertarian candidates, though?
The county supervisor of the Riverside County won. The actual Libertarian Party member that, you know, there's a few, and a few did well. And
should I have voted for that Larry Sharp guy? I saw him in a cool car, and I meant to vote for him because of it.
I voted for him. He's from Queens.
I must have been him. I saw his car.
Wait, who was he?
And
what did he do?
And I didn't vote for him. I should have voted for him. He's running for governor.
So he just drove by you? They don't have to try very hard to get your vote.
He had an awesome car. It was an
Look
awesome
at that
car. And I was like, I'm going to vote for that guy. And then I forgot about it.
I voted for him. You know, do I think he would have made a great governor? Yeah, maybe. But the whole point was to get the Libertarian Party on the ballot by getting over 50,000 votes. In this state, we are now on the ballot.
Oh,
just
nice.
The same as,
even without my vote, made it to 50,000.
Yes, sorry, you stand down, yeah. Cap.
I voted for Libertarian for like, I went through the ballot and it was like, I voted for, when there's nobody running, when it's unopposed, I just don't vote. I'm not a dictator. I won't vote for you if you have no one running against you.
And well, you then, could register for the Democratic Party and vote in the primaries.
I tried that, and when I showed up, they said I wasn't registered.
He showed
I
up
voted
late.
Absent. I showed up.
What's this play going on?
My wife and I both.
What did I miss?
I signed an affidavit and then they rejected it.
They rejected
and
the
same thing happened to Randy. We both were voting for different people though, so it would have been all. So it evened out. But so then I do that where I only vote for the party if there's someone running against them.
Right.
And then I would vote in Libertarian. Otherwise, I'm voting based on last names because I don't know. Like, I'm like,
well, usually,
that maybe I, Jewish. I don't know. See, I didn't know if AOC.
Ocasio-Cortez.
She's trying to win my vote this way because, like,
Jewish.
I'm
she's not running to be your gastroenterologist.
It was Jewish.
He sounds okay.
I mean, I know the Democrats are winning everything in New York, so it's more of a. I mean,
yeah,
having fun at the ballot.
We run the gamut from center far left to far far left.
Right.
So,
and a few libertarians.
I have voted for Democrats. I voted for Republicans. I don't think I voted for a Republican this time. I think they deserved no votes this time, but. But I voted for Libertarians, Democrats. But
this brings up a good point. Are you the number one Libertarian playwright in the world?
No. It's got to be the South Park guys.
Number two. Three.
But Turner's taking shots at them. He's.
Oh yeah. I think you're better than them. Yes. You're number one on this pod.
Well, all right. We'll set up an arm wrestling thing, and
if
maybe
we can get the South Park guys. They can come on this podcast.
They should
wanna
come
clear
on.
This up.
Yeah, have them on.
Come on. Randy Lee, book them already. What are you waiting for?
I think they prefer not to be called the South Park guys, but, they're stuck with it.
Deal Trey with Parker. It. You want this platform? Deal with it.
Come on, we'll introduce you by the name.
That's the podcast. Jeremy, thanks for doing it.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yes, it's fun, man.
Let me stay for news.
Come back anytime.
And see, the news seat is always a welcome to you.
Always
anytime you
warm.
Want to come in, just walk in.
I'll be part of the panel.
We'll leave a seat here for you.
Cap, what should we do?
Let's get lost.
Everybody's happy and gay when they're going out to play up and down Broadway. Girlies and beaux on the way to movie shows, dressed up in their Sunday best clothes up and down Broadway. When I'm down, feel low down, when I walk along the main street, anywhere I don't care, just as long as it's a main street, any old plain street, Broadway, Broadway, take a little time out to play, where the joy of living holds sway.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.